Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I'm David Chen.
And I'm Patrick Klepek.
And today, we're doing another Ahsoka minisode covering the final two episodes of Ahsoka Season 1. That is Episode 7, Dreams and Madness, and Episode 8, The Jedi, The Witch, and The Warlord. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. And find us across all platforms, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Threads, at Decoding TV. We got a few comments on our last Ahsoka minisode that I wanted to share, in particular from, frequent supporter, collaborator, and malcontent, Danish Syed.
talked to Danish as well, so that circle is overlaps here.
I mean, first of all, he said Ahsoka-sode, which was Patrick's suggested name
for these things. Thank you. Show some respect.
What? What is that? I am so confused. I don't know what to do. I'm so upset I need to cancel my subscription to decodingtv.com. So
damn.
I'm glad we didn't use the term Ahsoka-sode because it would have been too confusing for people like Danish. And also, Danish says, another piece of feedback, I have absolutely no idea who you're talking about when you use characters' last names. It took me a long time to figure out who the fuck Syndulla is. End quote. I am not sure if that is a criticism of this podcast or a criticism of, I'm going to say, the show, okay? That their names are not that memorable.
You know, so. I'm going to choose for it to be the show and not us, David. I like, why take that weight on our shoulders? I don't think that's necessary.
Yeah. Indeed, indeed. All right. Well, we have come to the end of an 8-week long journey I never thought I would take.
But the number is set. David, record that podcast.
Indeed. And so we are now going to discuss and spoil everything in the final two episodes of Ahsoka. And I think to kick things off, what I'd like to do, Patrick, is read this email from listener Sean from Vancouver. And Sean wrote into decodingtv@gmail.com, and we are recording this the morning after the Ahsoka finale aired. So in the time between the finale airing and us recording, Sean sent this in. He or she just had to get these viewpoints off of their chest. So let's talk about what Sean had to say. They wrote in, "Hey, Patrick, David, while I have tons of thoughts about what is ostensibly Rebels Season 5, where it succeeds and where it fails, my mind keeps coming back to this. How can a show that is so focused on reunions be so bad at them? From Ezra and Sabine's awkward pick you up from the airport hug, not contextualizing Ahsoka and Sabine's off-screen mentorship until literally the last episode, and then not giving even Ezra and Hera a real moment? Now, to preface, my partner and I are familiar with Filoni's animated work. Clone Wars is broadly messy but ambitious and occasionally interesting, and Rebels, while certainly cheaper production, far more successfully captures a classic Star Wars adventures vibe. The core cast of the show is deeply likable. There's parts that even on a recent rewatch made us both shed tears. It wasn't a perfect series, but it hit the right notes. Which is why it's just so disappointing that we felt so little for this. Is this just a prime example of writers' rooms on streaming shows being stripped bare, leaving a creative who hasn't solo written a series before? Is the emphasis on his experience with George Lucas overshadowing his skill working with actors in live action? I don't think the show is without its magic moments, largely due to its spectacle. Filoni does get to that classic mythic sensibility to the franchise. But when it comes to writing dialogue and crafting these characters as complex yet natural people, Filoni just hasn't proven himself to be that guy, at least not here," end quote. So, a disappointed fan of Clone Wars and Rebels, talking about Ahsoka and how the show just didn't connect with them. Patrick Klepek, obviously you and I have not watched Rebels and Clone Wars, but we're looking at this, you know, from casual Star Wars fan perspective. Do you agree with Sean from Vancouver's email at decodingtv@gmail.com? Do you think this series, Ahsoka, really failed to connect on an emotional level?
I think it could have done more. I think it's less that it doesn't connect as much as it could have done more with the material that's in front of it, even absent the obvious caveat, which is like your history with the previous work. I think even with what it's trying to accomplish with newcomers, I think it fails at a number of junctures to make those connections feel more meaningful in a way that could work better for an audience with the weight of history and just work plainly for people who could just read the room. Like there's a way of shooting a thing, scripting a thing that can lend gravity to a scene between characters that can convey weight, even if you don't have that history yourself. And I think this show often falls short in being able to balance those two things, which, you know, are inherently difficult, but I don't think the show is particularly great at accomplishing that difficult task. I do think it is interesting to think about Filoni in the context and legacy of George Lucas, in which maybe you feel differently, but I think like if you look back on Lucas's legacy, I think more specifically with Star Wars than anything else, maybe you would agree or disagree that it applies more broadly to his filmography and work in television, is like more of an ideas guy than anything else, where his like biggest strength is in his ideas, less in his specific execution of those ideas. And I do wonder, in watching Filoni take this move from animation to live action, that we are seeing like how closely Filoni adheres to that own legacy of George Lucas, in which I believe there are so many cool ideas here, right? I think we've talked a lot about them that are here on the screen, but I don't necessarily know that they're executed to the degree that matches the interesting ramifications or implications of the idea itself. And so whether that is a like inherent flaw with Filoni as a creative is because broadly his work is not in live action and is basically thrown off the deep end after like The Mandalorian takes off and has a collaboration with Jon Favreau. I don't know. Could probably be a combination of both. But I do end up broadly agreeing with the person writing in that when I sit and talk about some of the ideas that are present in Ahsoka, even some of the ones that are set up in this finale, and like I'm digging through Wikipedia entries to figure out like what they mean or what they're hinting at, it's like, oh, that's a cool idea. But oh, my worry is that it's not going to be executed as cool as what I think the idea could be. And I think that is definitely a problem throughout the show.
What were your overall thoughts on this season? Like, did you enjoy the finale? Did you think it was a worthy ending? Like, what did you think overall?
I liked it broadly. It still is a show that really only works for me on the strength of Sabine as a character. I think if like for some reason you deleted her, which obviously you couldn't, but like let's just say we're just ripping her out. Like the show, like there's very little about the show that I find interesting or appealing. The arcs of all the other characters, I don't think really arrive at a place that feels complete or meaningful. I think that is inherent in the fact that, boy, this is just a giant cliffhanger. It isn't meant to be the conclusion of anything, which it's a television show. But I think as you and I have tried to unravel, it's a television show translating, but also being a sequel to a long-running animated series, intersecting with other live-action shows on television, culminating in a film, and that is just a very delicate house of cards. And the moment this series accomplishes going to another galaxy, which in theory should be a blank slate for anything to happen, it really feels like the show is spinning its wheels to get to the finale, because it's like, look, we don't have 12 episodes. Like there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen. We don't have time for it. So like not much is going to happen in the next two. I hope you like those little creatures. They're very cute. They're adorable. In fact, they should just be on the screen more because they're maybe my favorite part of the two episodes. Mm-hmm. They're great. But I do think this show really doesn't know what to do with itself once it realizes it feels as though like, all right, we know what the closing shots are for this season. Oh, shit. Like 90 minutes has got to go in there. But we can't go any further past those closing shots. And you can just feel a squeeze that those cliffhanger shots have on the show. And I think it ends up resulting in a work that is I broadly enjoyed my time. I would watch a season two of this happily, but it feels like a pretty flawed work that is consistent with flaws that I've heard about Filoni in general. And there's not much here that suggests to me it's all that different. But your mileage is going to vary again based on how much history you have with these characters, and maybe that ends up papering over some of the issues that I have with it.
Patrick, are you familiar with Police Story 2 by Jackie Chan?
I'm aware that it exists, but I have not seen it.
Oh my god! First of all, dude, you got to
watch.
Like
Police
Story 2.
I feel like I've said something offensive. I'm going, dear listener, so many things like making. You know, telling David that I liked the Twisted Metal series, so I guess maybe we should cover the rest of it. Like, I've committed so many sins.
Yeah,
I think
maybe
this one is the worst one.
No. Here's a comparison. Police Story 2. Okay, so Police Story 2, 1988 Hong Kong action film starring Jackie Chan. One of the greatest action films ever made, in my opinion. Police Story 1, also one of the greatest action films ever made. And in my opinion, like, a legitimately pretty good film, Police Story 1 was. Police Story 2... upped the ante when it came to action scenes and set pieces, but the plot is complete and utter nonsense, right? So I still enjoy Police Story 2. You know, like, it's still great movie, a lot of enjoyable action scenes, but like, I don't watch it for the plot. You know,
yeah.
The plot is not what gets me through that movie. Similar dynamic here. I bring that up because the acting, the dialogue, the characters, the plot have nothing of value to add to my life doesn't mean that the work of art is a waste of time.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
Having said that, this is no Police Story 2. No, I'm just joking. I mean, Patrick, you know, I'm so grateful that Patrick, you know, signed on to be my sort of standing co-host for Decoding TV. And boy, we've been on some wild adventures since we started. You know, Secret Invasion. Here's the thing. Secret Invasion, that was a calamitous disaster, that show, right?
That show was so many podcasts and re-recorded them. We didn't know how to get through it.
Not the podcast. I'm talking about the actual show itself that cost over $200 million on Disney Plus. That was... basically a disaster of a show. Like, there was extremely silly, virtually nothing of consequence happened, tons of characters of potential just wasted.
Yeah.
A disastrous finale. Nothing, pretty much nothing redeeming. Like, I would not recommend that show to anyone. Right?
No, it's I have friends in my life that are big Marvel fans, and they're like, oh, I just haven't gotten to that one. I was like, you're good.
This is not a car crash on that level.
No.
This is merely, in my opinion, a very bad show. That has some good aspects to it. But this finale makes some truly baffling decisions, in my opinion. At the same time, some really cool stuff happens in the finale that is worth talking about and did get me excited and did give me a sense of wonder. And so I can't say that this show has no value at all. Like, there is some cool stuff to watch, but largely I would say this is not a good show. I would not recommend it to most people, certainly not to casual fans.
I sort of wish I understand why, and I won't be shocked if the next 10 years is broadly even guided by Filoni. Like, he has an appeal to a certain...
Yeah.
Like, he makes something that is really appealing to quite a few people, and people that consider themselves really diehard Star Wars fans. And so even though I'm not able to, I think even if I was to go back and watch Clone Wars and go back and watch Rebels, I still think I would find myself not fully on board with Filoni's approach. And I don't know how much that is the Lucas influence, how much that is just his particular reaction to Star Wars as a work and how he interprets it on his own. Like, he does have a vision for it. Like, he has an idea of, like, what Star Wars is and where it could go. And I realize that's an extremely low bar. But for a property that has felt, like creatively rudderless, even though it's had really, really high highs and really low lows, there is at least something interesting about, like, look, at least the man, like, kind of knows, like, he's like, seems like he's mapping. So, like, he has an idea of where this is going, thinking about past, present, future, which... I may not necessarily agree with all the decisions on, like, what those things were mapping out or where the hierarchy of values are, like, introducing, like, what seems to be, like, gods into like the Star Wars universe. I may not find that more compelling than like the on the ground, like grunt work, like in a show like compared to a show like Andor, but it's at least a vision. And so I understand for a lot of people why they find, if they line up with that vision, why they find themselves so deeply attached to Filoni's approach to everything else that surrounds it.
Say what you will about the vision of Dave Filoni, at least it's an ethos. You
it
know,
is.
At least,
I mean, it really is. Like,
say
it
what
feels,
you will about how misguided and painful it is to watch the show. At least it's an ethos.
Yeah, I don't think I think I'm closer to. I think I'm critical of it, but like I can go along for the ride. I think you less so, but I do.
Well, I will say this. I was fairly down on the show from the beginning, but I really tried to keep an open mind going into the finale. Yeah. And there were certain things that I was like, oh, well, maybe if they like pay this off, that will actually be like a pretty compelling little like mini arc for some of these characters. But I would say the, you know, episodes 6, 7, and 8, you know, like taking them together as a, basically once they arrive at Peridia, taking it together as a group, I think is pretty underwhelming. And the finale just makes decisions that are like, yes, they might be acceptable in the world of like Star Wars live action shows, but like are just, in my opinion, bad storytelling is what I how I'd describe it. So let's talk about it. But anyway, those are our overall thoughts on Ahsoka season one. Actually, one last thing before we talk about what actually happens in Ahsoka episode 7 and 8, which is there has been quite a bit of debate about whether or not this is a series finale or a season finale of Ahsoka. I don't know if you saw this, but the Star Wars social accounts tweeted out the following. This is an actual tweet from the official Star Wars account. Get ready for the series finale of Ahsoka tonight. Catch up on episode 7 streaming on Disney Plus. So then people like Gizmodo reached out and said, is this a series finale? Because that's news to us. And then those social posts were deleted, right?
Mm, so, isn't there, you would know this better than I, but like there is language about that that is specific for things like Emmy considerations, right? Like whether something is considered a limited series versus an ongoing. So sometimes that language can have like pretty specific implications in terms of like the bookkeeping of how a show
correct,
is thought
correct,
of, right?
Correct. Whether it's a limited series, like it would affect which category it's submitted in. Like, is it a limited series or is it an ongoing series? Although some shows have been able to, there's been some debate over some shows. Like, for instance, The White Lotus, you could argue that season 2 was a whole new series because there's no
it's
one.
Kind of an anthology format.
Kind of anthology,
to,
you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's debatable in some shows, but regardless, so did they delete, that tweet because they're not ready to announce that it's a series finale, or did they delete it because a social media person made a mistake in the language? It's unclear. There's a lot of speculation that Dave Filoni's movie, which may or may not still be happening, is going to tie in events with what
if
happens.
If any of those movies
shows.
Happen, I bet it's that one. Like, the Mandalorian train is like, you can disagree with the tracks, but like, they're there, and like the train is moving. So, of all those films were announced,
say what
like,
you will about the tenets of the Mandalorian.
exactly. So, but like, I actually think it's sort of a distinction without a difference in terms of like, is this a series or season finale? Because there's already present evidence in how Disney has rolled out this corner of the universe. If you think of what Favreau and Filoni are doing, as they're both building this shared corner of the universe, building off one another, playing in with one another's characters. Like the Book of Boba Fett, like takes a careening turn into the Mandalorian for 2 episodes. It's not going to shock me if in the Mandalorian season 4, which my understanding is already written because Dave Favreau is often writing these like full, years in advance of filming the shows themselves. We'll just have like, I think, the titles
John,
of these
John
shows,
Favreau, I think you mean
so. John Favreau. Yeah, like the titles of these shows are going to matter less in so much as like these characters are just going to start jumping between these different shows, and when they're whatever it's named is just telling you that's sort of the main character, but like everyone else is along for the ride. Like I fully expect with the certain events that occur at the finale of this, some characters in certain parts of the galaxy, some characters in other parts, that it's very easy to imagine those characters easily hopping over to the next season of The Mandalorian. And so Ahsoka season two, yes or no, sort of means less to me, as much as like, I don't think we're abandoning these characters. Like, they're coming back in some way or another.
That's fair. But I guess just point being, unclear whether or not it's a series finale or not. The season premiere did do very well. Disney actually released some numbers. Like, I think 14 million people watched it. So it's very possible there's going to be an Ahsoka season two, but as of now, it's unclear. Is all I wanted to say about that. So anyway, those are some overall thoughts on Ahsoka season one.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
All right, Patrick, let's talk about what actually happened in these episodes. And here again, I am reading from the Wikipedia plot summary of Ahsoka season 1, episode 7. On Coruscant, Syndulla faces a disciplinary hearing with tribunal member Senator Hamato Ziono objecting to her reports of the secret Imperial Remnant conspiracy. C-3PO arrives and provides the tribunal with fake authorization by Senator Leia Organa, forcing the court to absolve Syndulla and Mothma to consider the threat of an Imperial resurgence. It's like, Patrick, it's the thing that you remember from the thing, remember?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, look, again, it's a low bar, but like, hey, we're not like CGing somebody that died, so like, yay! You know what I mean? Like,
that is your bar for a callback that you can get on board with, basically.
I mean, for the precedent that Disney has set, yes. Like, C-3PO is like, that's table stakes, whatever. He shows up in everything. Like, that, he'll be in the next three movies for all we know, so... I didn't mind it.
It's a C-3PO, but basically, like, the whole reason we spent any time with Syndulla at all this season was to lead to this moment, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, Syndulla, you can't send out people to go and help Ahsoka, and the reason you can't do that is because this moment, like, to culminate in this moment, which is basically a callback to the original, you know, the series of movies involving Leia.
The more charitable reason, but I don't think is necessarily a good storytelling reason is, you know, we've talked about how much this show seems to be intent on explaining, like, how is the rise of the First Order going to happen? How did the New Republic fuck this up? And this show is just so intent on me, like, man, the New Republic is really bad at this. Like, just like, I don't know, send a shuttle to see if Thrawn's still around. Not a big deal. You got resources. Like, you got the Empire stuff. You got your stuff. And just unwilling to even fathom the thought of, like, you know, in a universe where lots of people mysteriously return, magic exists. It's called, you know, like, no, like, bad guy could never come back. I think part of my issue with how Hera has been portrayed in this show is, like, she largely just exists to, like, have friction with the New Republic and show them as inept in a way that helps explain how we arrive at, like, you know, the new trilogy of films, but doesn't necessarily give, you know, a really talented actor anything to do over the course of the series. And I don't think necessarily even justifies, like, it just makes the New Republic seem inept in a way that isn't like, look, we watch poor governance all the time. It happens all around us. I think there are better ways of portraying the New Republic as being inept and how that would lead to a rise of fascism again.
Yes.
But it doesn't have to happen like this, obviously, necessarily.
Yeah. And to be clear, Syndulla, by the way, for Danish's listening, is the Mary Elizabeth Winstead character with the green makeup. So
yes.
Anyway, that's completely fair, Patrick. And you know what? I was going to say, I didn't even mind it. I didn't even mind the callback.
Neither.
You know, it was, it happens relatively quickly, and it's like, it's fine. But yes, that what you said, that is a probably the best way of reading what happens with Syndulla's plotline this season. Anyway, moving on. Arriving at Peridia, the Purgles run into a minefield left by Thrawn's forces in retreat. Continuing alone, Ahsoka and Hu Yang are attacked by enemy fighters and hide in a debris field, compelling the Grand Admiral to adopt a more calculated approach. Ahsoka locates Ren through the Force and heads to the planet's surface. Bridger, Ren, and the Noti are attacked by Hati, the local bandits, and Thrawn's night troopers, while Skoll leaves to pursue his own agenda. Ahsoka's intervention forces Thrawn to withdraw his remaining night troopers and prepare his imminent departure. Ahsoka invites Hati, who has been left behind, to join them, but Hati instead runs away. Ahsoka, Bridger, and Ren then joyously reconnect. All right, Patrick, let's talk a little bit about this. I actually thought this was kind of a cool... There's some cool action sequences because Ezra is like, no, I'm not going to use guns, for this episode at least.
ditches that core tenet of his philosophy awfully quick.
Yeah, and so, but you have one guy who's basically like pushing people, and then like Sabine has like multimodal fighting techniques.
Yeah, he's more of a martial arts like sort of approach to like combined with the Force in terms of his fighting style.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think Ahsoka and Hati have a battle as well, if I recall correctly, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, that was solid. Like, the action in the show remained solid until the very end, I would say. And the action scenes in this episode were, like, pretty decent, I thought. Any comments, Patrick? Any observations?
No, I broadly agree. And also, it's just, you know, I don't know how successful ultimately at this point in the show or even by the end of the show they are in conveying why Thrawn is a threat. Like, I don't think this show does a fantastic job of displaying this, like, masterful
He's
tactician.
He's a master tactician.
Yeah, you know? Well, because, yeah. Again, we've talked about, like, the whole thing about his character is, like, that pesky Force. And, like, but that's all around him right now. So he can't even, like, see mm-hmm. what happens when he's separated from, like, the pesky Force that he can't anticipate. But you do see, I like the fact that he sort of says what he's going to do, talks about what worked and didn't work, and then moves on to the next thing. There's sort of something cold and interesting about how he approaches and explains himself. It doesn't feel like it's talking down to the audience as much as it's that's just how his brain works. And so I found that dynamic between as different attacks are going out onto our characters to be like a kind of fun dynamic, as we would always cut back to Thrawn and he would sort of like, the, you know, the acceptable losses line, which is one that he said, you know, like over and over and over throughout these episodes. But I'm with you. I think like one of the highlights of the show has been, you know, Star Wars at its weakest when you've gotten past the like either the nostalgia or the just like niftiness of like, ooh, like the magic glowing sword is identifying fighting styles. And I think the strength of this show has been identifying fighting styles with these various characters.
Yeah.
And finding ways to emphasize that in a show that's had a lot of action. And oftentimes in Star Wars, that action can be used to just kind of muddy over like more interesting storytelling. It's like, everyone loves the lightsabers. It's like, yeah, but like I'm almost 40. Like I've seen a lot of these, like you have to bring something yeah. to the table. And I think frankly, the strength of the action scenes in this show like only make the weaknesses in the character work more glaring, because it's like you're like in a show that was able to pump those parts up a little bit better. Like, I think you would see the quality of the show more broadly, like feel more in equilibrium, because it just feels like the action is end up doing in many ways. It does a lot of character work because it's, I think, you know, you and I both had a lot of issues with the dialogue in the show, interaction with characters in the show. And oftentimes, you know, action can be a great way to express character moments. And here it's like it's doing that, but often because the rest of the show isn't doing a great job of carrying those character moments. You often learn more about the emotional state of the characters through their action scenes. And I just wish the rest of the show kind of carried that weight as equally.
Absolutely. Completely agree, Patrick. Okay. Now, Patrick, prior to the finale, we had spoken a lot about how Bail and Skoll and Hati are like awesome characters. And
Do we have to do it?
And okay. So Thrawn, and we're like, okay, well, Thrawn is clearly being set up as the big bad, right? But they're probably going to kill off Hati or Skull. Like, that will be the big confrontation of the season, is like Hati or Bail and Skull, because like they've been fighting these characters all season, and like obviously the show is going to end with like a big confrontation with at least one of those characters, and either one of them being vanquished or killed or whatever like that. But what the creators of the show thought was, what if we didn't do that? What if we went a bold way and had the final confrontation be with a character we've barely been paying attention to this whole season?
Yeah.
That is to say, Elsbeth, right? She becomes the big bad of the finale. And on the one, it's literally what you just said, which is the Elsbeth sequence and the fighting with Elsbeth was totally badass, I thought. Like,
yeah.
some of the stuff in the finale was hit or miss. Like, when they first show up and there's like a wave, like it's like 50 stormtroopers shooting at them, it's a little bit comical, and I didn't love that. The zombie stuff was kind of cool, but the fight with Elsbeth was awesome, I thought. Like, the idea that she has like a blade that needs to be wielded differently than a lightsaber and like have a different posture, like all that stuff was really cool. Completely let down by the storytelling this season, which relegates Elsbeth to not even a side character. Like, I think the Noti get more screen time than her this season. Like, she's barely present in most of the season.
Yeah, and especially because there's a moment in the finale where she's given this great power, asked to make a great sacrifice. And I think the show wants us to feel a little bad for her, like, oh, you don't get to go on the grand, like, you don't get to see this through.
You don't get
like,
to see the promised land.
Yeah, but it's like, yo, you haven't done any character work with her. Like, look, problem one, identifying with the fascists. But if I'm going to do that in a show that like kids identify with the fascists, it sort of goes with the territory on Star Wars. Kids like Darth Vader, but like, there's nothing to that moment for me to even like identify with. Like a villain feeling disappointment, which is an interesting dynamic to have as an audience member. But like there's that shot where they're like, you can tell like, oh damn, she doesn't get to do this. And it's like, who cares? Like, I don't.
Well, couple things. First of all, I think Elsbeth was a character in the animated shows, right? So like, I think if you'd had hundreds of episodes of like buildup of who Elsbeth was, maybe this would be a significant moment for
and
you.
But I think that speaks to like, and again, it's like,
yeah,
hey, show, this is the challenge you took on, right? Yeah. And if that is true, which I'd be curious if people, you know, want to write in if that moment hits differently. That's been one of my favorite parts about like watching the show is then reading up reactions differently, like elsewhere, to be like, where people are like losing their minds, and I'm like, oh, okay, well that just like flew right past me.
Right.
Like but, different moments in the show where they're repeating shots from like Clone Wars, and people are like, oh, it's that. I'm like, okay.
But Patrick, what is wild is they actually did do a decent job of building up Bail and Skull and Hati in this show.
I know. Yes.
And it's like the pieces are all there to have like a really great confrontation between like the most compelling character in the show, Bail and Skull, and whoever else you want them to fight. You know, like Ahsoka, Sabine, whoever the hell. You know, like whatever that. But like, but then to have the big confrontation be with Elsbeth, it's just a bizarre decision, in my opinion, given how good Ray Stevenson is in the show. And also, we had debated whether he's going to be killed or recast, and it does look like he's probably going to be recast if we're ever going to follow up on that storyline again. So
it seems, based on my cursory searching of where he's standing, like they don't have a choice. Like if they're going to continue that storyline, they're going to have to recast that character. It seems actually, again, based on what I've read, like potentially like deeply central to what that movie ends up being as well, like big mythology parts about Star Wars that Filoni has like played in the past. But I'm with you. And I think this is part of the curse of that. Hey, we're not conceiving a show as a show to give like an arc that's going to feel like there's a difference between having a show give you over the course of a season, a sense of finality while also leaving threads open to pull on. I think the shows that are at their best are able to like, our characters have arrived here, but man, it'd be really interesting to see like what if they like open that door. And here, like the door has never even tried to be shut. Like, the door is wide open. It feels like Ahsoka Part 1. Like, and hey, in the spring, like, there's going to be six more episodes. I'm like, oh, okay, like that. All right, then you would feel better about, like, where this ends. Because that would just, I mean, it would still feel bad because, but that's where we are as a culture in which we have these, you know, I've listened to you, you know, talk about this on the Filmcast a lot in terms of a lot of films that have come out this year that feel like they are not being created as a singular work. It is just a hard cut to a black screen and credits and like tune in to the next one in a way that doesn't feel satisfying. And I think the way that Star Wars is trying to emulate Marvel, ironically coming at a time in which Marvel is buckling under the weight of that very same connective tissue, there's a different world where you take all the same story elements that you and I have watched over these eight. And I think you can still end up broadly where we're at. But if it was thought, if it was developed as though, but like, what if there wasn't another season? You know, what if there wasn't? Like, we'll leave some open doors that we could go down. Like, you would wanted those characters that we came to find interesting and threatening and have some sort of moment in the finale. And they have nothing. They're not even present in that final episode.
Well, they show up and we see them, you know, walk on, take a few steps on a mountainside, basically, right? And
yeah.
And yeah, I was like, oh, wow, Ray Stevens, that was an interesting storyline. I wonder where that's going. Nowhere this season, at least.
No.
You know, like, that's the answer. And hugely disappointing. Now, look, I understand, right? We're watching chapters in a bigger book. I understand it's not going to tie everything up. But to be a satisfying season of television, it needs to tie up some things. And I think for a lot of people, they think it tied up enough things. Ezra got to go home. And that's the story. It's like, okay, if that works for you, then all the power to you. For me, I was hoping for a little bit more resolution when it came to things like what happened with Baylan Skoll and Hati, you know, and like just because that character is so interesting. And there's just bizarre things happening left and right. Like a major point about like Sabine and Ahsoka's relationship introduced in the last episode, right? Like, I don't know if you caught that. I think our writer wrote about that as well. Our emailer wrote in about that as well. Not contextualizing Ahsoka and Sabine's off-screen mentorship until literally the last episode. Like, that's dropped in the last episode. It's just like, it just feels like sloppy, honestly. It doesn't feel like the storytelling is under control. And that was a real problem for me. So let's talk about some of the stuff that happened. In episode 8, The Jedi, the Witch, and the Warlord, Elizabeth is gifted a Night Sister sword from the Great Mothers to confront the Jedi, while Bridger constructs a new lightsaber using spare parts from his late master, Kanan Jarrus. Ahsoka, Ren, and Bridger make their way to the Chimera, which is docked at the Eye of Sion, but are confronted by Elizabeth and the Night Troopers, whom the Great Mothers keep resurrecting after they're killed. What do you think about zombie stormtroopers, Patrick? What do you think about the design, idea, execution around them?
I'd love it in concept. I just wish they'd sort of gone further in execution.
Absolutely.
I have no... I think this whole idea of a different way of tapping into the Force, a different version of the dark side is... And like calling them witches is inherently cool. I think it is a really neat way of...
Is it the Force, though, or is it magic?
I don't know. Like, I have no... But like, whatever. Yeah. Like, the Force certainly implies other mystical magics, energies in the world, and however you classify it, and Filoni experts can write in and are the Night Sisters tapping into the Force or something different. But like, I don't have any problem with it conceptually, and at the end of the day, like, it's cool, and so run with it. But like, they're zombies. Like, I don't need them to turn into flesh eating monsters necessarily, but it felt like a really cool idea that I just wanted more from during the actual sequence,
because they largely look indistinguishable from regular stormtroopers.
Yeah, they just have the green, right? If not for the VFX,
if not, but they have some green eyes, and then like maybe you see like glimpses of underneath the outfit.
We get a little bit of that when they fight the Death Troopers or whatever, the ones that are like up top, like the two more powerful ones.
And yeah, those were the juggernauts. Basically, those were kind
of
cool.
But you get to see some of their face, like some of the masks come off, and like they're clearly rotted, weird corpses underneath. And I get it. You know, like, this is, it's meant to be like a family friendly show to some degree, but look, now you're doing zombies. Like, scare the kids a little bit, man. Like I would have imagined if like all of a sudden this, like, the armor started dropping and it was revealed to you, like, this is what the Night Sisters are doing to these people. Like when you gun them down, when you slice them down, they come back up. But like, this is what's happening underneath would be like, I think a great way of illustrating what is like truly terrifying about the powers that they wield.
Yeah, I agree. Great concept, not so great in execution, or not as maximally terrifying as it could have been in execution. Ren uses the Force to help Bridger jump onto the Chimera while Ahsoka kills Elsbeth. Okay, so that was a pretty cool moment when she, like, they both use their Force powers to, like, push Ezra onto the ship. I thought that was kind of awesome, I have to say. You know, like,
it was nifty, although I think I'd expressed earlier in our discussions, I was kind of hoping that she would never develop Force powers at all. I always thought that her character seemed interesting as someone that had a limited connection to the Force, even though all living beings have some connection to the Force, but that her way of interpreting, interacting with it was different. Like her feelings of being a Jedi would be manifestly different than our like sort of a broad conception of it, which is you have a lightsaber, you jump around, and you Force push. And it's like, oh wow, a character that feels like they want to be part of the Jedi Order, interpret like what that means on their own, but can't do the magic powers. Like, I knew this is where they were going. Like, I knew they just were doing it too many times. Like, rules of three, she's going to try and push something and eventually like it's going to budge, and I can accept it. I just find it a little bit of a disappointing turn for the character, because now like our three main characters are all Jedi, and they're all like really good at it. And it was not kind of cool that we had somebody
right
with a different fighting style, approach, mindset to the world, and in some ways could be sort of an audience sort of surrogate of like, wouldn't it be cool to have those powers? And I'm like, yeah, but like you don't have them, but like you can hang out, like still like, you know, help. But I agree with you that I think it actually fits the mold of appreciating how the show incorporates different fighting styles. Was how many times have we seen a Force push? A million times, right? It's still on like a kinetic level cool to watch when done well, but there is something really neat here of the idea of turning into a video game double jump, which I have not seen before.
Yeah.
Like Star Wars has been manifested in a million forms, so many video games, so many animated shows, so many movies, that it's hard to come up with something you haven't seen. I was like, oh, all right, like I don't like this turn for the character, but I'm with you, David. Like, that was pretty sick when she first pushed him up.
Well, and the whole, like, it also is into the setup of, like, this ship being docked on this massive monument or whatever, and then, like, them being able to, like, access the dock from, you know, like, the setup, the execution, it was all very cool. So, like, props,
I agree.
Props where it's due. So, anyway, the Eye of Sion jumps into hyperspace, leaving Ahsoka, Sabine Wren, and Hu Yang stranded on Peridia. As Thrawn and the Great Mothers arrive over Dathomir, Bridger escapes and reunites with Syndulla and Chopper. Ahsoka, Ren, and Hu Yang join the Noti and make their new home on Peridia, watched over by Anakin's spirit. Hati joins the bandits while Skoll is guided to a mountain by a statue of the Mortis gods. And that is the end of Ahsoka Season 1. I want to say that it's really a bummer that the Sisters of Dathomir use what seems to be a last-in, first-out system. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you just got inducted into the order? Guess what? Guess who's the first cannon fodder to get out there? Oh, you think it's one of us? Like, we've been doing this for 1,000 years.
You know,
like,
how long we've been on this goddamn planet? You know, have you looked around here? This is miserable.
No, we're not doing. You're the one. It's like basically a freshman hazing ritual is like what Elsbeth goes through, right?
Do you think she's dead? I don't buy that she's, I mean, this is like, it's an episode in which she used her powers to resurrect creatures over and over again. I feel like if they want to, Elsbeth has a power in her back pocket that like also allows her to tap into whatever that is.
Yeah. I did think it was a little bit goofy when she gets the powers and it's like, oh, now you have the black eyes and the makeup now. And it's like,
is this like a Matrix situation?
It makes sense intellectually that that's what would happen. But like, it's just weird that it happens all of a sudden and to a character that we've seen. You know, anyway, okay, go ahead.
The Night Sisters should have come over, like, take out the makeup kit and, like, start applying, like, hey, now you're one of us. Like,
now you're one of us, yeah.
Exactly. Like, they're going to prom. I understand why this happens, but I guess it's like a Matrix situation where one gets handed a cool sword and thus becomes a blade master. There's nothing about Elsbeth that has suggested to me, like, she's a character that stands around, looks stoic, and, like, wields green evil magic. But also, I guess we're meant to know that, well, in her downtime, she pours herself a glass of wine, puts on some music, and, like, practices the art of the blade. Like, just suddenly she is, like,
yeah, there's no setup for it at all.
She's
right?
able
there's
to
no...
go to toe-to-toe with Ahsoka, who is, like, you know, has trained under Anakin Skywalker, like, has two blades. Like, we have seen be the ultimate Jedi badass. And just like, well, someone handed me a sword, like, time to be awesome at it. I mean, it's fine. Like, it's the least of my concerns in terms of logical leaps. But I couldn't help but laugh a little bit where I was like, where did she also inherit the skills of the blade when she touches it?
Yeah. We got to see Ezra. And again, I just, you know, people have been very kind in the emails and the messages we've gotten about our podcast. I think, like, they know that I'm bringing a critical eye to the show. And I think they, many of them share that critical eye. So I am often trying to take the show on its own terms and trying to give the show the benefit of the doubt. And even in that regard, it is still very difficult when you have Ezra reuniting with three people in this show, three major reunions, none of which make really any emotional impact. The closest one was the last one with Syndulla when she kind of gives him this, like, odd look when he shows up on the ship, right? That was the closest thing I got to, like, a ping of, like, actual genuine emotion in my bones, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But our emailer at decodingtv@gmail.com wrote in and described it as, like, you know, greeting your friend from the airport hug. I have seen people meeting people at airports that's, like, way more passionate and intense than anything we saw on this show, right? Like, you know, if you've seen Love Actually, airports are actually really emotionally intense places because you're seeing people who you haven't seen in, like, 3 months or whatever, and they're people you really love. And the fact that they couldn't even nail those reunions, to me, speaks to something deeply wrong with how these shows are being directed and, to a much lesser extent, acted. Because it's like, that's not... You're building up all season to this, like, big event of, like, Ezra is such a big deal. And then when the reunions happen, it makes no impact at all. And so, for me, that is why the show fails. Not like, we didn't get to see Thrawn do a bunch of shit. Like, it's like, emotionally, I didn't connect with the main core of what's going on here. And I don't think the show gave me the tools to do that. Patrick, am I being unfair?
No, I think you're right. I think anything in the grand scheme of things, the show is not being thought of as a singular work where, like, hey, we're coming in and we're coming out. Maybe we'll revisit these characters another time. Like, the groundwork for this show, its mission is to make more people care about these characters that are being plucked from a different world of Star Wars, brought here, and now you need to be invested in them. And I think you're right that broadly, it does not accomplish that mission for the average person. I think it makes them look cool. I think, like, you can see, like, how they could be interesting. But I think in terms of, I don't think either you or I expected to have the same emotional response to different scenes in this show without the weight of history with them. But, like, a good show, good writing should be able to convey the gravity of that, so that even though you don't experience that emotion, you can, like, sense it. You can feel it. It's the same with, like, when you go to an airport and you watch people,
right,
like, see people that they love and hug, you're like, well, I don't really give a shit about these people. Like, I'm really happy for them. Like, that seems like a cool feeling to have.
Yeah.
I think that's a really interesting way to put it, because in many ways, watching this show feels like you and I going to like a Star Wars Rebels airport. It's like, well, we're here. Like, we're going down the track, like, seeing, like, I kind of remember that. Like, I kind of know. And you may not be able to experience the emotion yourself, but you can appreciate the sentiment being shared. And I don't think this show nearly got close in being able to accomplish that. And whether that is a fault of, like, trying to do too much fan service versus trying to make it work for newcomers, I don't know. But at the end of the day, I think you and I are on the same page of, like, some potentially interesting characters, but ones that I don't leave. Like that moment at the end with, like, Anakin's, like Force ghost, I know is supposed to be, like, I'm supposed to be, and I'm like,
Patrick is touching his chest and exhaling. Yeah.
And instead, right, I'm like, the visual effects in this series seem pretty poor. like that's like what I'm thinking at the end instead. And so I'm with you. I don't think it is too harsh to say that this series broadly failed on conveying why these characters care so much about each other. Because there's a way to do that without understanding. You can yada, yada, yada plot and all that. But you should still be able to convey the emotional part. And I don't think they were able to do that. And those moments, like, should be critical junctures in being able to do that. I do think the last one, Syndulla's awe at seeing as, like, there's a good build-up to it.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead is a great actor. You know,
I think she sells it. And there's even though we know who's there, we know who's under the helmet. I thought they did a good job of having actual build up. Like, I mean, again, like, they're the sequence where Ahsoka sees Ezra for the first time. It's the most emotion. Like, it's just a random shot, but, like, she's, like, smiling and hugging him. There's no build up to that. Like, this is a character that has largely spent the show crossing their arms and not expressing any emotion. And the one time she gets to smile, we don't get to have any appreciation or build up as the audience member. It feels very odd. And I'm with you that it doesn't quite land.
It is a baffling decision. The show's full of baffling decisions, you know, like, why relegate Skull and Hati in the way they did? Like, two characters, like, they didn't even kill Hati off. That was the thing that's like, I'm like, you set up basically four bad guys, of which two of them are, like, pretty interesting. And then, like, the one that you actually use is somebody who's been in the background the whole time. But the other thing is making Ahsoka the central character of the show, I think, like, it, you know, it sells tickets, as they might say, but... What was the purpose of that? Like, is this supposed to make Ahsoka seem interesting to general audiences? Because if so, I think they completely failed at that. That was a disastrous... It's, in my opinion, disastrous depiction of this character. Because the character changes, like, has some revelations about, like, her relationship with Anakin and her relationship with Sabine Wren. But, like, that doesn't seem to change her demeanor in any way or her personality. You know, like, it doesn't seem to change really her actions that much, in my opinion. Like, yes, she might have taken some different actions. She might have, like, decided to go to Peridia differently or not go to Peridia or whatever. But if the purpose of the show, big if, was to introduce Ahsoka to general audiences and make people invested in that character, I do think the show has failed. If the purpose was just, hey, we're telling an extended story from Rebels and Clone Wars, then I think it's fine. I think it does what it's supposed to do. You know?
I agree with you. Like, how, and we won't know this until later. Like, where does this fit in the broader framework? Will we look back at this in 3 to 4 years and go, wow, nothing in that show actually mattered? I think it's entirely possible that all that mattered from this show was, you know, Thrawn has returned. You know what I mean? Like, that is...
Somehow Thrawn has returned.
Somehow Thrawn... Like, well, to most of the galaxy, that is going to be how it feels. Like, damn it. Somehow Thrawn has returned. And I, you know, I think it is, as a result of that, like, would this show have been better to have been simply just titled, like, Star Wars Rebels? Like, hey, we're going to bring some of these characters in, live action. It's really most, like, hey, we are building to a movie, but... Like, tune in to the movie. Like you're good. Like, these characters are going to be on adventures. They're setting things up. They're going to pay off in the movie. But you can just watch the movie when it comes out, and we'll do the table setting for you. But here, calling it Ahsoka, putting her in Mandalorian, is really forwarding her as, like, hey, like, the Star Wars universe as it currently stands, post Rise of Skywalker, doesn't have a lot of main characters. Like, Ahsoka is now positioned as one of them, which is why they titled the show that way. But in many ways, I think it ends up doing the show a disservice, because I think with a simple title tweak, it alters your expectations of like what you're watching and what the show is meaning to accomplish. And it may end up feeling like that in the long run. But like right now, like Disney's telling me like, hey, if you care about the Star Wars universe, like keep up and like watch the show. And I have a great worry that the reason Ahsoka's character didn't go through many evolutions, the reason that like not much happened was because, well, it just can't. Like, this is a side story that's putting the planks in place for a movie.
Yeah, they're saving Ahsoka's big turn for the movie or whatever.
For the big turn for the movie, and that, like, they're just going to have an exposition dump this all over again anyway. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to have to re-explain anything that's that important, like, is going to have to be explained, you know, again to an audience that maybe hasn't seen the movies or the television
shows. Yeah, they could have called it a lot of different things that would have set expectations differently. The Adventures of Ahsoka and Sabine. They could have called it The Return of Ezra Bridger. You know, like what they could call the show any number of things, but they chose to call it Ahsoka. And I do think that did a disservice in many ways to the show and to our expectations. I will say, though, that the score of the show is really cool. And I did, one of my favorite parts of watching the show is at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
The Ahsoka logo coming up and like the score kicking in. And I was like, oh, that's a really badass score and like a cool looking logo for Ahsoka. So maybe they saw that and they're like, oh, we can't get rid of that, you know?
Well, I was saying, you know, to the you know, for all the ups and downs of the television extensions of Star Wars under Disney Plus, one of the great highs has been the musical accompaniment, like the scores to these shows, because they, for a series that is so burdened by history and nostalgia. They have gone out of their way to try and find like The Mandalorian, even if you don't like that show, like I think it's a kick-ass theme, like has a really great score that I listen to when I write constantly. And Ahsoka is going to, despite like having pretty mixed feelings on the show, I will probably listen to that score. Like that end credits theme, like which they replace, the final episode has something different. But the first seven has like this great like it's awesome. Like it's so cool.
It's so cool. Yeah.
And it expresses a little more gravity to the show than maybe the show was expressing itself when I would get to the end.
But yeah, Mandalorian score, Ludwig Göransson,
great
writer of the score, really amazing stuff. And the score to Ahsoka is pretty good. Kevin Kiner, I think, is the composer for Ahsoka, so I want to give them props as well.
And Ahsoka is one of the few times where they actually allow themselves. The TV shows have basically said, we're not going to do much. We're not going to like hit too many of the Williams, the John Williams themes. This show, definitely, I think this is a Lucas part of Filoni, is like,
they
definitely
invoke
it. We're gonna do that a little more often, but it at least makes those moments like land better when it's a surprise that they're weaving in like a theme that we know, because it actually ends up adding some weight to a scene as opposed to like, remember, because like they could just easily do like the Imperial March for Thrawn, because like, yeah, he's the Empire. But like, I'm glad that they don't, so that at some point you can tell at some point Thrawn is going to get like the Imperial March theme, and it'll feel cool because they waited as opposed to like just laying out the carpet on that immediately.
We should also say that Thrawn shows up at Dathomir, I believe, with a bunch of coffins, right, is my understanding.
And so
he's like probably going to be able to raise a whole zombie army. And presumably this zombie army is going to play a role into the rise of the First Order, is my guess, right?
So, I would guess so, yes.
Yeah, so that's where that's going. And whether that's resolved in Ahsoka Season 2 or the movie remains to be seen. But hopefully we get to see Thrawn do some badass stuff. You know, I posted on Threads, I was saying like how I thought this season of TV was disappointing, and I was saying they didn't make Ahsoka into a compelling character. They didn't make Thrawn into a like any kind of threatening or dangerous or, you know, intelligent figure. And somebody responded, they said, well, he won, didn't he? And I guess it's like, okay, fair. And and I think, and basically from what we understand, he will win, you know? So, but I don't know, man. I think that like to make someone like Thrawn into a threatening character, you need to have like the main characters try to put together some elaborate high impact plan, and then Thrawn figure out a way to thwart it, possibly in real time, and show like how he's like the master of like thinking on his feet and stuff like that.
Yeah, and nothing about the New Republic suggests that like these real geniuses are gonna like when they discover Thrawn has returned, like they're gonna roll out Plan B. And
right, right. Basically, like nothing in the show suggests that it has the building blocks to even do what I suggested, really, in my opinion. So, or is even interested in doing what I suggested. Instead, just referring to how Thrawn is threatening, you don't need to show it. You know, that's what a lot of the show does, is it tells and doesn't show, which is a core of a lot of my issues with the show. Okay. Anyway, Patrick, we've done it. The Ahsoka minisode is now longer than the actual episode of Ahsoka itself, or at least an episode of Ahsoka. So we should really wrap up. But I do want to express my gratitude again for Patrick for putting up with my complaints for the show, but also to our listeners for just being really understanding. You know, like sometimes depending on what we're discussing on the show, a different audience that is not receptive to my opinions catches hold of the podcast and you know, is like very mean in the emails about whether we should talk about a show. But I think people understood that I tried to bring a very charitable, analytical approach to my watching of the show. And even though I ended up not liking it, I'm still grateful to have gone down this journey with Patrick Klepek. So anyway, that concludes our coverage of Ahsoka for this season. And let us know what you thought. DecodingTV@gmail.com. Find more episodes at podcast.decodingtv.com and find us across all platforms at DecodingTV. And of course, you can always support the show by becoming a paid member at decodingtv.com. You can find more of Patrick Klepek's work at Remap Radio, wherever podcasts can be downloaded, and crossplay.news is his Substack newsletter. Patrick, thanks for chatting with me about Ahsoka Season 1.
Thank you.
All right, and thanks for listening to Decoding TV. We'll see you this week with our coverage of Loki Season 2. We're also wrapping up our coverage of The Continental, so keep it tuned into Decoding TV. And yeah, we'll be doing weekly coverage of Loki. That'll be the next big show that we cover. So looking forward to covering that right here on Decoding TV. Thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.